The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Oh, I'm glad you're with us on this so far sunny afternoon. Got a lot of stuff to get to. Very, very busy news day, as it always seems to be around here. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
Your read on The Big Lead.
I got an incredible amount of feedback to a story that broke while, or at least the information about the story broke while we were on the air yesterday. And it was a shocking story in almost every way. It was the story of a guy down in Lakewood, 54-year-old man. He was homeless. He was sleeping in his truck. And one of the only gigs he had was somebody who owns a little auto yard there said, hey, if you want to park your truck in my auto yard and you can sleep in your truck there, and I'll let you do that, just keep an eye out to make sure that nobody steals from us. As I understand it, that's how it went down. And so what happened was, in the middle of the night over the weekend, about 3:30 a.m., the guy sleeping in his car feels his pickup truck, the truck moving, and he hears a noise from the undercarriage. He wakes up, and he sees a guy, his torso, under the car, presumably trying to steal his catalytic converter. So Michael Campbell, the guy sleeping in his truck, he says he grabbed his gun and shot the catalytic converter thief. But he didn't kill him. So after shooting him multiple times, he then tied the guy's hands. He had a rope, Michael Campbell did. He tied the guy's hands above his head and then connected the other end of the rope to the ball hitch on his rear bumper, and he dragged the guy to death. Or it was a combination of the gunshot wounds and dragging him down the road. So I had an opportunity yesterday to talk with the Lakewood police chief about what was just a shocking incident in every way. Every aspect of it was shocking. And Chief Mike Zorro, he told me from his perspective, from the police report, how they saw it all go down.
He immediately confronts the person with a firearm and shoots multiple times at him while the person is still down on the ground. Actually hits him, and the victim, proclaims, "You shot me," and the suspect in this takes the guy's Sawzall, throws it in the back of the truck, and there's another verbal exchange, and then he ends up, it sounds kind of gruesome to describe, but ends up tying him to the bumper of his truck and dragging him out into a field where he left him to die.
Okay, and it was one of the strangest stories I've heard in a long time.
At every turn, there's something weird about it, and that, to have somebody try and steal the catalytic converter off a truck that somebody's sitting in and sleeping in, to have that person get out and just go to shooting right away and then drag the person to their death, and then, even after all that, just stop and tell us what happened. It's just all very strange.
So Michael Campbell, the 54-year-old guy sleeping in his truck, he's now been arrested, and he's going to be charged or has been charged with second-degree murder. And what he told the police, the reason that he shot this guy, the reason he then dragged him to his death, is Michael Campbell said he was tired of getting ripped off.
It's really hard to say if there are maybe some mental capacity things there that they can, people might look at later, but really in just having the conversation with him, he said he was tired of his stuff being stolen, was it. And it just was out of frustration and anger.
So that's Lakewood Police Chief Mike Zorro yesterday on the Dory Monson Show. Now, here's what I wanted to talk with you about today, and that is the reaction. I said there's going to be a your read on The Big Lead, because I would say I got so many texts about this, probably 100 texts, and I'm not exaggerating. Probably about 19 out of 20, maybe 95%, were sympathetic to the guy who was sleeping in his truck. And I'll give you an example of the kind of messages that I got. This is from the 360. Dory, why do you think it's so unbelievable that a homeless guy who's trying to make it by having a job would be pushed to the breaking point of killing someone that is stealing from basically his home, his truck? He probably doesn't have the money to spend on replacing the damage to his truck, which is essentially his home. The thief got what was coming to him from a guy that is living every day right now on the edge of ruin if he lost his job, his truck. That kind of stuff is going to happen more and more. And that's what a lot of you said is, and this is what I absolutely 100% agree with, that we are going to, and you may recall, I've been predicting this for a couple of years now, that we are going to see more vigilante-type justice in this region because the police are not allowed to do their job. The prosecutors are not prosecuting crimes. We're letting criminals walk. What would have happened, and don't misconstrue anything that I'm saying. I'm not defending, you know, dragging a guy down the road to his death. But what would have happened if Michael Campbell had just gotten out of his car and held the guy at gunpoint, called 911? Well, first of all, I don't know if he had a cell phone. A lot of people ask that question. Why didn't he just hold the guy at gunpoint and call 911? If he's a homeless guy sleeping in his truck, I have no idea if he has a cell phone there. No clue. And I've not been able to determine that. The person who called this in was a witness who saw him dragging the guy down the road, and then a minute later, the truck driving by without the body behind it. So that's who called 911 in the middle of the night. And when the police responded, they were talking to the witness, and as they were talking to him, Michael Campbell goes driving by in his truck. So I don't know if he had a phone, but if he did, what would have happened to the suspected or the accused catalytic converter thief? Basically nothing. Because we don't, it's considered a non-bodily injury crime. And we have, throughout this region, we have decided, not we, you and I are outraged by it, but our politicians have decided that they are going to just let criminals walk free. And not just minor criminals, but serious criminals. Jay Inslee released, you know, he talks all the time about we got to get tougher on gun crime. And then what does he do? He lets loose hundreds and hundreds of felons from the state prison who are in for gun crimes. So if we won't even enforce existing laws, why do they always talk about the new laws that they want? They won't even enforce the ones we have that would go a long ways towards stopping some of the carnage. But we let everybody walk free. And if nobody's, you know, Michael Campbell's probably going to go to prison for most of or the rest of his life. But the catalytic converter thief, he wouldn't have gone to prison, likely. I don't want to speak for the prosecutor down there, but we are having people, there are thousands of these catalytic converter thefts, homes being broken into, cars being smashed and grabbed, and people are tired of it. And this is what I've been predicting for a couple of years, and this is just yet another manifestation of that. That if our politicians will handcuff our cops so they can't do their job, if our prosecutors won't lock up and keep away from us, criminals, if our county executives will insist on not having jail space for criminals, then people are being pushed to the limit. And, you know, the chief suggested that the guy sleeping in his truck may have had some mental issues. Yeah, probably. If you're capable of shooting somebody and then dragging them while alive to their death, it's probably somebody who's got some mental issues. But until our politicians start protecting us from criminals, you're going to see more and more individuals who are going to engage in, you know, the old West justice. And that's not a good thing, but it's a necessity for a lot of people. They know the response times. If somebody's breaking into your house, we're defunding the police. And so the response time, which might have been 3 or 4 minutes a few years ago, it might be 10 or 15 minutes. Well, then you're dead. If you're in your house and you got a meth addict who's broken in, you're dead before the police get there. And so more and more people have decided that they need to protect themselves. And we're just going to see this more and more. But I'm curious, now that I can put a finer point on just the response that I got, because I can't justify in any way what the guy did, what the truck owner did. Oh, one other thing, real quickly before I move on. A bunch of people said, well, if he was living in his truck, and our courts and our legislature have ruled that if you're homeless, if you're living in your car is your home. So you can park anywhere you want for as long as you want, and we'll consider it your home and not a vehicle that's been left for 72 hours. And somebody said, would the Castle Doctrine apply if that's his home? Not once he starts dragging the guy down the street. I have no idea about the gunshots when he was sleeping in his home, which was his pickup truck. I've talked to a couple of lawyers, and I've gotten differing responses on that. But it is interesting that our courts, our legislature, our city councils, they've all said that, well, if you're homeless and you're sleeping in a car, we won't tow the car because we're declaring that your home. So if somebody is sleeping in their home and somebody breaks into it or underneath it, would that be protected by Stand Your Ground or Castle Doctrine? I don't think courts have ever answered that question, but it's something that's going to come up more and more. I'd like to continue to get your thoughts on all of this. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Let's continue the same theme here. This is a story that's gotten almost zero media attention, because there are certain deaths that we seem to not care about. And we care deeply about the Seattle police officer who was killed trying to help an accident on I-5. We care deeply about that. For whatever reasons, when people are killed in the South End and suspected to be a gangland shootout, doesn't seem to get much attention. If it's homeless people, doesn't get much attention. But this one's horrific, and it happened yesterday morning, 3 a.m. There's another huge, major homeless encampment in the Mount Baker neighborhood. And after 3 a.m. yesterday, all of a sudden, there were 50-foot-high flames that were shooting up from this homeless encampment. And the fire department responded. This camp is in a heavily wooded area. There are a lot of trees and bushes and dried underbrush around this area. And so Seattle Fire Department comes out, and they douse it with water. And then they discovered two bodies inside what they called a pallet structure. So it had been made out of wood pallets, and they found a man and a woman who were in this pallet structure who were immolated in the blaze. I bring this up because every progressive member of the city council and Jenny Durkin, they are all so compassionate. We will never sweep these homeless encampments. We're too progressive for that. We will let people steal from others, sell what they steal to get their heroin, to get their meth. We'll let them sleep in the mud. But we will not sweep the encampments. And for all of these reasons, we're seeing this unbelievable heartlessness. And I'm telling you, the way we're treating homelessness around here is some of the most heartless, inhumane, ungodly approach that I could ever imagine. What would be far more humane, what would be far more compassionate, is what I've said for years, ever since the homeless problem became one of the worst in the nation here in our region. And that is, you're on the streets, you get two options. Option one, we will give you all the help you need. We'll get you a dry place to sleep indoors. We'll get you meals. We'll get you mental health treatment. We'll get you job training. We'll get you alcohol and drug dependency counseling. And we'll try to get you your life back. Or we're going to lock you in jail. Because we can't keep doing this. We can't keep letting people just die in these blazes because of our progressive, thoughtful city council. And I'll give you another story. As you heard in Aaron's newscast right at the top of the hour, another driver on right underneath I-90 crashed after a huge rock was thrown, almost certainly by a homeless person from a construction area. It was a black Dodge Challenger that was driving near Rainier Avenue South last night about 11:15. A rock was thrown onto the car's windshield, a direct hit, and the driver had facial injuries, lost control, hit the barrier, came to stop in an HOV lane. The car was just heavily damaged. And how many times are we going to see this happen? Homeless people dropping concrete, dropping rebar, doing everything they can to try to randomly create havoc. But we're too compassionate and progressive to sweep them off the streets. I would suggest to our Seattle City Council that the people who died in the fire yesterday, to the innocent drivers who have had their worlds turned upside down and will be eventually killed, they've thrown a scooter off an overpass, piece of concrete, as I said, rebar, rocks. This has become sport for the desperately mentally ill people, the addicts who are on our streets. And our politicians continue to say, but we can't touch them because that'd be mean. Yeah, you look at the owner of this Dodge Challenger that a rock dropped through his windshield last night. Tell him about how humane you are, about how loving you are, about how progressive you are. It's a failure. You know, this leftist politics is an absolute miserable failure in this region. But they're going to continue to just go down this road. And I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know if it's going to take, you know, God forbid, somebody that they love dying from one of these random acts. I have no idea what it's going to take. But it's got to change soon, and you and I have to be the force for change by getting rid of all the mentally ill people who are on the city council and other parts of government, state legislature and elsewhere. That is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Coming up next, I'm going to talk to a citizen who pays a lot of property tax dollars to the schools, and he's in the Tahoma School District, where he saw what they said about equity, which is one of the most misleading words that's being used today. We'll hear what his issue is. We'll talk with him about that coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, as I've been saying for a long, long, long time, we have a battle going on in our nation. And it's a battle for the minds of our children. And the more parents just allow those minds to be turned over to what is an increasingly radical agenda within education for this critical race theory and lots of other nonsense that's being peddled instead of just getting back to educating kids, then we're going to have a problem. But parents are rising up. And you've seen the clips. I've played the audio from school board meetings around the country where parents are speaking up and they're doing something about it. Dave Tegler, he's a concerned citizen, a taxpayer in the Tahoma School District. He's been communicating with their board and including me in the conversations or in the missives. And he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, Dave, it's great to talk with you this afternoon.
Dory, thank you for having me on. I truly am a concerned citizen after what I saw on the Tahoma School District website, and we can talk about how I got there.
Yeah, but let's go over that, because you were going through just some public links that they had available. And what was the one that jumped out at you the most, Dave?
The one on equity focus areas. As I read through it, my first reaction is, my gosh, it looks like they're teaching identity politics in school. And because I'm somewhat familiar with some of the terms and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And I got to reading through it, and there was one paragraph in this thing that really lit me up. It was the equality versus equity section of the thing. And if I can read just what they define as equality, aims to ensure that everyone gets the same things in order to enjoy full, healthy lives. And it only works if everyone starts from the same place and needs the same things. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute, that's not true at all. What about Ben Carson and Barack Obama? They excelled from rather meager beginnings in some cases, and there are dozens of other examples of that. So that's not true at all.
Well, no, and the problem with this being peddled in our schools is the people behind it, and you sound like you're very conversant with all the phrases that are being used and everything. This is an unabashedly Marxist agenda. And, you know, under my view of the world, because I didn't get any head start in life. I had a lot of things that were really challenging for me as a kid. But it is my belief that we should be colorblind and that life should be a meritocracy. And there's nothing more important in a free society than private property rights and individual rights. And the message that's being taught in the schools is anti all of that. You're not colorblind. You judge people by the color of their skin. You say that we need equal outcomes, regardless of the effort one puts forth. It's a really damaging message, Dave, and it is unabashedly a Marxist message. There's no question about that.
I think that's what motivated me to respond to you, is that I really believe it is. There's a new term we're calling it now on the conservative side. It's called cultural Marxism. And I think Mike Levin has even written a book on it. But to try and help the Tahoma School Board, I wrote a letter with my rebuttals to their webpage. And they, and this is a very collegial kind of a letter. I'm not being an adversary or anything. I'm saying, hey, wait a minute, you guys. So you got some of this stuff wrong, and it seemed to be quite an improper balance on your approach here with these equity focus areas. I basically called it out as cultural Marxism, but the thing that I think bothered me is that there are good people out there like Bob Woodson, who's written a wonderful book, Red, White, and Black, and Candace Owens, a very outspoken person, which if these people had looked at any of this material from that perspective, they never would have created the web page that they did. So there's clearly an agenda here that is imbalanced. And the point is, I think the one we all have to worry about is here our kids have been kind of destroyed by not having education for a year due to COVID. Yeah. Then you bring them back into school and you waste all this time and money on equity and diversity rather than teaching them how to read and write. And,
right.
And it just it seems inappropriate. And I guess I'd have to ask you, How much of a concern is this really, that we need to spend this much effort and time on it? I'm here in sleepy Maple Valley, and it seems like it's a disproportionate amount of time.
Well, I think it is the greatest concern that we face as a nation, and I really mean that, because I mean there were efforts at Marxism back in the 50s and into the 60s, and they realized that it was not a popular message, that Americans didn't want to suspend property rights, and they didn't want to suspend individual rights, and we want to judge people on the content of their character and not the color of their skin. But then it's all gotten flipped upside down. They realized, well, we can't come with this frontal attack with Marxism. We're going to have to go through the children. And that's where I say, Dave, if parents allow this to happen, shame on them. I'm going back to the Tahoma page that you linked up, where they talked about what is meant by the term equity. And it's about treating all children as the individuals that they are, not treating all children the same. So, I mean, they have that in writing, that they don't believe everybody should be treated the same. And treating everyone the same is part of what our nation was founded on.
Right. I agree. The thing is, their definition of equity, if I can read it, Dory, it says equity involves trying to understand and give people what they need to enjoy full, healthy lives, because needs vary by individual. And my rebuttal to that one is guarantees of equity, providing people what they need regardless of how hard they apply themselves or work, is the essence of Marxism and communism.
Of course.
I said, look, your definition is right from the lips of Karl Marx, from each according to their ability to those according to their need. I don't know what reaction that had with them. But
well,
the point is,
it's undeniably true, and they're going to deny that, Dave. But because they've been brainwashed themselves. But it's undeniably true that that's what this is about. And, you know, under their vision of equity, the hardest working kid and the laziest kid deserve the same outcome. Under equality, we should give both those kids the same opportunity, and then their diligence and their effort and all of that will determine their outcome. And that is the essential difference between Marxism and freedom and capitalism.
I totally agree. And I think the problem that I'm having is their terminology. The average citizen out there with kids in school is working hard and not really paying all that much attention. He's sucked in by their language. What's wrong with diversity, and what's wrong with equity? They think equity is equality. They're equating the two. It's very clever in terms of a deception. And I think the more light we can shed on this, I would invite everybody listening to you, Dory, to go to their local school board webpage and see what's written there. And if the word equity pops up, they need to be mentally replacing that word equity with Marxism.
That's exactly right. Well, Dave, I'm glad there are people like you who are watchdogging all of this. And, you know, you sound like a good man. You don't want to go and scream at a school board meeting. You want to get intellectually engaged with them and try to present another view. And that's what I fear, is they don't want to hear any other views. They are so deep within the cult themselves that I don't think they can even imagine a way out right now.
What do you suppose is motivating? Is there money involved with the teachers' union, or what's going on? What's creating this agenda?
Well, it is the same forces that, you know, tried to, you know, that started all the racial division and back in the 60s. And then people like Martin Luther King came along, who was much more of a, you know, aligned with what you and I seem to be aligned with, and that's judging people by the content of their character. And the Marxists were frustrated. It's people who just have, they don't have the will or the energy or whatever it is to make something of their own life, so they are trying to just destroy capitalism and destroy what we've built as a nation. It's very insidious disease that we're facing right now in our schools.
I totally agree. Well, I appreciate the help, and hopefully we get people looking at these websites and attending school board meetings and letting people know, or the school board members know, that if they're doing the same sort of thing Tahoma School District is out here in sleepy Maple Valley,
well,
then then they've got to get the board's attention that this isn't acceptable.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Glad there are citizens like you out there, Dave. Thanks for looping me in on all this.
Hey, thanks very much, Dory.
All right, Dave Tegeler, a citizen down in Maple Valley who's trying to knock some sense intellectually into the Tahoma School District. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more to come here in the Dory Monson Show. Hey, have you thought about quitting your job? I've got a textbook example of how you can get free from that daily employment grind. I'm going to take you to Houston, where the local Fox affiliate there, you know, like our Fox affiliate, Q13, is a Fox O&O, owned and operated station. And in Houston, it's the same way. Well, there was a reporter doing a live shot, and as the anchor tosses to this reporter, she, before she gets to the story that she was supposedly there to cover, she says something about how the Fox network is muzzling her and won't let her tell some story and is keeping it from the viewers. And here's what this woman said. Her name is Ivory Hecker in Houston, as she prefaced her live shot by blasting her employer.
Thanks, guys. That's right. Before we get to that story, I want to let you, the viewers, know that Fox Corp has been muzzling me to keep certain information from you, the viewers. And from what I'm gathering, I am not the only reporter being subjected to this. I am going to be releasing some recordings about what goes on behind the scenes at Fox, because it applies to you, the viewers. I found a nonprofit journalism group called Project Veritas. It's going to help put that out tomorrow, so tune into them. But as for this heat wave across Texas, you can...
Okay, and then she goes on to do a story about air conditioners. But she said the Fox Corp is preventing her from getting some story out. And I know people who work at the local Fox affiliate, and they tell me the Fox Corp has never interfered with their storytelling or their reporting one time. And so I don't know what this reporter is talking about. But she says that she contacted Project Veritas and they were going to break her story, including these clandestine recordings that she made to prove how the Fox Corp is not letting local reporters tell or break stories. Well, I'm on the Project Veritas website right now and I don't see anything. And they often will tease ahead if they have a story that's coming. Maybe they're going to break the story tonight. I don't know. Whatever she's talking about. But there is nothing on the Project Veritas website. Okay, so that probably ensured that she was going to get fired. I'll tell you what, I'll tell you what really solidifies that deal. When your boss calls you to tell you that you're suspended and you record that conversation and then post that for all the world to hear, yeah, I think she's probably sealed her fate.
Hello.
Hey, Ivory.
Hi.
All right. I wanted to call you and let you know that you are suspended effective immediately, pending further review.
Okay.
I would ask you not to come to the station, okay?
Okay.
All right, and we will be in touch.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
I'm guessing that her career is done at that station. And if she, maybe she has something blockbuster and secret recordings about how news is being kept from her viewers. Or, as a friend of mine said, maybe this was just her Newsmax audition tape that she was doing there. But that is a surefire way. If you want to get yourself fired from your job, if you're tired of the daily grind, that's the way to do it right there. Okay, we're going to check the news for you here at the top of the hour. Oh, we've got a blockbuster Fastest 15 coming up as well. I love all these stories. You're going to hear them coming up next right after we check the news on the Dory Monson Show.